acknowledgement is 605 through 650. So I must tell you, when I read that, it looked like we were going to start a whole new process over again, but they've convinced me that the error of my terrible ways to leave it alone. So,
well, if you're satisfied.
I'm enjoying hearing you say something, because I lectured them this morning over that, and they convinced me I was wrong. Okay.
Well, I think it says the right thing also, but I thought if you wanted to make clear, that would be one way to go.
No, I think if if even a lunk like me can figure it out, we'll leave it alone.
Okay, good. Page 6, here we come to the $10,000 figure that seems to be a problem for some persons. I want to just speak to that a little bit, if I may, to give you some additional clarification from farmers as to how $10,000 arrived. This figure. First of all, let me say again and again and again, we're talking about the provisions for a farm dwelling in EFU zones. And this is on small parcels. It's not the conventional family farm. This is not in marginal land. It's not in rural residential land. It's EFU zone. You may recall some weeks ago, Mark Knapp of a young farmer from Rickreol showed up, and he talked about, on a hearing on this bill, and he talked about $20,000 as being peanuts and $10,000 just nothing at all for a gross income for a farmer. For instance, I did a little calculating at today's low filbert price of 37 cents a pound and a very moderate yield of a ton per acre on a 13 and a half acre parcel of filberts, you would be able to gross $10,000. So we're talking about very small parcels. Bona fide farmers, even the very small bona fide farmers, will have no problems. There are lots of other options available for part-time farmers. Part-time farmers have marginal land, and again, the part-time farmers I know who are serious about part-time farmers, holding down two jobs, sometimes the wife does a lot of farming and the husband has another job, those people are making $10,000 gross, most of them. We're not talking about net, we're talking about gross. They don't make much profit, and they can always work those tax statements out so they can, you know, the poor farmer, we don't make any profit. I mean, you know, we're all guilty of it. But the gross is there. The gross is there. And let me remind you also that there will be small parcels available for these part-time farmers on marginal lands with a house permitted by right without any kind of criteria, the lot of record that we're expanding for the small 2-acre parcels, and if other counties are like Benton County, and that I know best, then there will be much more residential land in good farm land, good farm soils, with parcel sizes from 2 acres to 10 acres. And those also are places where small farmers make a fantastic amount. I visited a neighbor the other day when I needed some rhododendron flowers to take out of state, and on her half acre, a fantastic rhododendron nursery. And this used to be a rural residential land. Thank goodness it's back in EFU and as a pre-existing parcel. The other thing is that in EFU zones, there are many, many, many homes on small parcels. And ordinarily, that's the kind of parcel that the young hobby farmer or the older hobby farmer purchases where there's an existing home. So we feel that a $10,000 figure is not unreasonable. Ag for Oregon thought they were being very generous when they settled originally for $20,000, and $10,000 came out of political reality, not out of agricultural intelligence. Holding a $10,000 precise figure gives planners a clear standard by which they can make a decision. And we think this is important because one of the things that you have heard repeatedly in the last 10 years in relationship to land use laws is it is a bonanza for attorneys. It is a bonanza for people wanting to appeal. So if you have a clear standard of $10,000, you're going to cut down appeals that result from someone's discretion. In reality, the whole idea of $10,000 having a dollar figure in annual gross income there is not a new concept in state statutes, because it is, of course, there in the farm value assessment. So we think it is appropriate. And I would also add, and this reflects back to Senator Day's comment earlier on the marginal land definition and that $20,000 figure, I would comment that actually, unless we go through a drastic period of deflation, $20,000 and $10,000 are going to be less dollars now, 5 years from now, than they are. And a comment again on the marginal lands definition, that $20,000 aspect. We're assuming, it's the position of agriculture for Oregon's position, that if that land was valuable enough to produce gross income in the 3 to 5 years, 3 to 5 years preceding the effective date of this act, the quality of that land is not going to change in the next 5 years. We're talking about land that we want to preserve with good conservation practices. The agricultural community in Oregon does a good job of protecting its farmland. We don't foresee that just because the dollars changed, that the quality of that land is going to go down. And so we think that the criteria could continue. On the other hand, I'm hoping that you're all reelected and are going to be here in 4 years, and 4 years when we have had 4 years' time to look at marginal land, you may want to take another look at this and say, is this the right criteria? Do we need to tighten up, or do we not need to expand? But at least it will give us a working period of time to see whether it is appropriate. Okay. Have I answered some questions?
Certainly have.
You've done a very good job.
Thank you.
Do.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
Sir Hamby?
I'd ask staff to respond to two concerns that I pointed out in the Washington County memo. So they've got a chance to look at.
Concerning the memo from Washington County, which you should have, that passed it out.
As I understand it, Senator Hamby, one is on page 2, number 3, which deals with the irrevocably committed standard, as we suggested, because that language is already over in the exceptions process. It's unnecessary in this bill, and we recommended that it be deleted. So that answers one.
And we did, if you'll recall, recall the exceptions process. We modified it in the exception process as well.
Correct, so that surrounded language isn't there as well. The other item, number 8 on page 3, deals with the contiguous...
Excuse me just a minute, please. I'll tell you,
certainly.
Mr. Chairman, I just can't hear. I'm trying to listen, and all the conversations, at least at this end, it's hard to hear, so I'd appreciate if they just hold it down.
If you do need to talk, please go out in the hallway. Would very much appreciate it.
I apologize, but I just can't hear.
That's right. Thank you for raising the point. Mr. Eber?
Page 3, number 8, deals with the language about contiguous ownerships. The language in there now is the same that is in the existing lot of record provision, and I don't believe the problem raised here really is a problem. The language was designed that if someone owned 50 acres, and sold through some arrangement with a relative 25 of that acreage, you would and it was still being managed as a farm, you would look at that as one parcel. However, if I own 25 acres and a month later a relative, as defined in the statute, moved in and bought adjacent to me 25 acres, those would still be viewed as two separate lots, and in that case both would be eligible for a building permit. That language in there is only designed to say if you have a parcel that's broken up in different family ownerships for a variety of reasons, but it's one farm.
The two sibling scenario painted within that paragraph, then only one residence would be allowed on the division.
Depending on how, if one relative sold part of their land to another relative, then it would only be one building permit. If they bought two separate parcels or pieces of land adjacent to one another at separate times, then two building permits. So it's based on the timing of and the creation of the lots, not the fact that there's just two relatives there.
Senator Day?
Yeah, could I have the Association of Oregon Counties come up when you're ready.
Let me just make sure Senator Hamby's down here.
Yeah. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Unless you noticed any other glaring problem that was not addressed or that was a concern for the department as well.
No, I hadn't had time to review the complete memo yet.
Make sure you keep going through that while we've got you here. Okay, Gordon?
For the record, Gordon Fultz, Association of Oregon Counties, and Daryl Gerritsen, County Counsel from Yamhill County. Could we offer a reaction, or were we here to respond to questions at this point?
I presume we're here to respond to questions.
My questions are, you've heard the dissertation from the LCDC, and before we adopt the amendments and pass a bill out, you might like to make a comment. It's up to you what you want to do.
Thank you, Chairperson Kitzhaber, Senator Day. I guess we, at this point, even with the improvements offered by the amendments from the department, which I do think are improvements, still feel that the bill sets forth some very arbitrary standards, standards that I think could go either way and I think could cause more damage than good. Our preference in terms of handling this particular issue is to turn it over to the department with direction that they come up with a marginal lands definition, taking into consideration, if you wish, such things as an income test, as a size of parcel test, and any other factors that they deem necessary, including the various geographical differences that might exist, and let them go through, if you will, a more exhausting effort of coming up with a definition that works. Also, with that particular procedure, you allow them by rule to make necessary changes as they see the need to do that. I think that we've come up, you've been going through this for several weeks, I realize that, but I still think the definitions are quite arbitrary. They may work well somewhere, they may not work well somewhere else. And I think to better respond to the issue of pulling the kind of lands out, I think, that you're trying to define, it's best to be left with the commission, where I think there's a good deal more knowledge, and they can go through the hearing process to do that. And that would be our preference in terms of legislation.
I guess I respond by resisting that, to say we may make mistakes and we don't have it right here, obviously, but then as long as it's not, it's some movement in a direction, if it does apply and if it does work for certain areas. We're not mandating that it work for every area. At that point in time, I think with the commission amendments that they collect information that says it doesn't work in this kind of county, and we've had this proposal, this county feedback saying it doesn't work here at all, and throw off the income text. I'm not willing to shuffle all that responsibility and all those policy decisions off to the commission to create more problems for them. I think it's up to this legislature to take some of the flack from the anti-land use planning people so that we don't just get here and dump it all off into LCDC, give them something in 2295 saying, now we're going to give you a little more authority and do be flexible, but by golly, don't make any changes that we don't like. And so I'm willing to stick with what we have as a definition, take the responsibility that it probably isn't right the first time exactly, and hope that we haven't qualified too many lands in. I think we'll provide some flexibility and some relief to areas that it does fit, and I'm not prepared to throw it all back onto LCDC and say, go ahead and begin to, you know, in addition to all the other things you don't have money for, start all over on something that the legislature couldn't do. So I just am...
Chairperson, may I respond to Senator Cohen?
Yes, briefly. I don't want to have a debate here.
Okay, just real quickly. I guess that the goals were turned over to the commission back in the beginning because they felt that having the public hearings throughout the state was a better way to come up with a solution on each of those items. I'm more fearful that one of the things we're trying to accomplish here, I hope, is the feeling for the people of Oregon that we are providing some flexibility. We're providing some answers. I think, quite honestly, that you've provided, through this measure, somewhat of an arbitrary test that I don't disagree will help some, but I think it'll frustrate a good deal more. And I think it might be better policy to at least exhaust some more hearing processes at the local level to let people have their input on this subject, even though I realize you've done what you can here, rather than sort of under the guise of a marginal lands relief, come up with some very arbitrary definitions. That's our concern.
Mr. Chairman?
Day.
Well, I really have had concerns over this definition, but first of all, I think we have to look at two or three things. First of all, the department is faced with losing as much as $700,000 to $800,000 of general funding. The number one priority, as far as I'm concerned, of this department is to get their acknowledgement process done. No more jacking. If they have to do this, and I've talked to the chairman twice on this, he is very fearful. That what this will do is, if we throw that to him, is just absolutely sidetrack a good share of their effort in acknowledgement. And this has me worried, okay? Very worried. Now, I do look at this a little different than the goals that were delegated. This is a relaxation of a process concerning how we handle certain lands that don't fall in the national, you know, the resource category outside urban growth areas. And in addition to this, we are indeed providing and will provide, I think, and you've worked on it, an exception process in 2295, I think we'll relieve it. So I don't think it's quite the same sphere that you were looking at maybe even 30 days ago. I think you can see there's a combination of both. Stafford Hansel feels very concerned the fact that we should address this issue in some way concerning this, and as director of the department, a number of the staff to try to come to grips with something that would address it in some ways. In most cases, I believe that this will apply primarily in Eastern Oregon, if you want to know the truth. The application of this, I think, is in a very limited way here in Western Oregon. But the exceptions process is not, and it would assist us in many ways, I think, through 2295. So I must tell you that, Mr. Chairman, so you know, Ms. Foltz, I am going to support the department's recommendations here on 237 for all those reasons, because I'll be darned if I want them to claim that we detracted them from finishing the acknowledgement process. I've heard so many excuses that when they come back 2 years from now, they better have it all done, because they were supposed to have it all done 6 years ago. And I think what you're suggesting, in a time when we had more time and maybe more money, might be the practical way, but I think the department's hewn this down. If you look at the changes they're proposing, they're pretty responsible, and though I have tributations about this $10,000 and $20,000 figure, I've talked with them as late as this morning, and some of that criteria they use all the time. I mean, they actually are looking at that type of criteria and can show how they can pretty well dig that out right now. And so after talking to my local assessor here, he thinks it's going to that it's easy. It isn't all that tough to do. So for those reasons, I want to tell you, I share Senator Cohen's view. I just don't want to change that workload right at this point.
Mr. Chairperson, yes. Senator Day, in response to your comments, one of the things that concerns us about the marginal lands portion of the bill is, well, one, I don't characterize this as the marginal lands bill because I don't feel it provides any relief to counties. I characterize it as the farm residence restriction bill. But in dealing with what it does in regard to marginal lands, first of all, on page 3, line 10, it's still required to go back to the commission for the commission to deal with the very specific concerns, matter of fact, concerns that Yamhill County has in regard to marginal lands not being forced into a situation of having to designate lands as marginal lands until you do address things like the extension of public facilities, wildlife, things like that.
Yeah, I don't think it's sane, and I've worked that over about 3 times. What that's saying is that if you apply this marginal lands concept, if you apply it, that and you effectively make a plan amendment change, you will bring it through the process you normally would. You have an acknowledged plan. You adopt a process to go forth. You will come through. If you adopted any plan amendment, you would still have to submit it to the commission. That's all it's calling for, the way I think it is.
I think that section's calling for the commission to develop at least a policy paper at a minimum dealing with those concerns vis-a-vis the definition of marginal lands. That is calling for further research and restrictions based on these concerns, watersheds, groundwater, and extension of public facilities on the lands you designate as marginal lands. Now, a second problem for Yamhill County is we were acknowledged in June of 1980. It appears that we'll be required to submit for periodic review by June of 1985. Now, during the 3-year period that we've been acknowledged, we've had a significant reduction in staff and a significant economic shortfall. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we have 3 items that we were required to do as part of our acknowledgement order. One was a mineral aggregate Goal 5 review. One is essentially a rewrite of our comprehensive plan, since it now consists of 5 documents, and an attempt to get it down to 1 document. And the third is an agricultural lands inventory.
Now, I suggest you don't even pick this up. You don't need to do
that's
the
what
thing,
I'm saying.
But you don't have to in Yamhill County.
What I'm saying is it creates the perception with the public that there is something out there, Senator Cohen, and we're not going to do it. I agree.
Not, not to do it.
We're not going to do any marginal land.
I guess what we can do, pardon me, I'm sorry.
No, I get it. I just don't want, by virtue of the fact that you continue to tell us that you have to do it, when you know that you don't have to do it, adds to the public perception of the fact that, you know, there's something that ought to be done that isn't done. And
I think that's
and I just think
well, that's our concern.
Like
that's a major point. This is not a relief bill for people.
Right.
And that's not, that's not.
We asked it to be.
That's the important part.
And I guess what we could do is make it very clear in our letter of intent to clear that factor up if that's your major concern. I think this addresses.
That's my major concern, Senator Day, as to the marginal lands portion.
We have to deal with the people at the local level who come forth and say, okay, there's a marginal lands bill. Now we know you can give us some relief. How are we going to do that? Mm-hmm. And we have to tell them that, look, that the tests in here are not such that they provide relief. And
no, just there so, is a so test under the exceptions process, if you so. And
I
the point
that.
Is, you're looking at a twofold approach here. We aren't mm-hmm. approaching land use in a vacuum here. We're looking at least two major pieces of legislation. This one is Lazarus from the dead that certain people feel it will help relieve certain areas, geographical areas of the state. It may not relieve you at this given point. I don't think it will. But that does not mean that your particular type of concerns aren't being addressed forthrightly in 2295, because they are. God, are they, okay?
Yeah, I agree with you, Senator Day. The exceptions is probably the main relief we need. I'm concerned about the reaction we got out of Senate Bill 419, where our inquiries went up. We had angry people at the desk. We went through about 3 months of...
I'll give you a personal letter to make you feel better, okay?
Well, we'll post it on the board.
You get a several copies.
There's not quite yet.
Thank you very much.
You're an exception.
The second thing I wanted to respond to, though, was the dollar figure, and my concern about the dollar figure. We provided the committee information about the crop value figures, and in fact, they are available in Yamhill County. What concerns me about the $10,000 figure, to give a classic example, is a filbert orchard. Our filbert orchards are traditionally small. The average filbert orchard is 13 acres in Yamhill County. If you have a 10-acre piece of land, it's only going to net $7,000.
We're not talking about net, we're talking about gross.
Or gross.
Excuse me, you can gross more than that and not net.
Well, the problem we have is we have to rely on the extension figures, and the extension figures show
a gross. We're not relying on extension figures here, we're relying on the individual person's gross.
Well, that's
and I don't mean to be argumentative, but we've been through this now the fourth time in terms of gross land. And we're still talking about the same issue. And admittedly, there's those people who have resisted.
Well, I guess, Senator Cohen, the question I would have for the committee is, philosophically, does the committee want to ensure that the land is in production, or does the committee just want to preserve the land in large blocks? Because it seems that the 10,000 figure is...
No, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, it doesn't apply to Yamhill County, so why aren't we not...
No, I'm talking now about Section 4, Senator Cohen, which would apply to Yamhill County. The amendments to the EFU for location of farm dwellings. And that's what concerns me, because if it seems that the goal of the committee or the goal of planning is to put the land into production, then this doesn't do it. I was very sad to see the section deleted from here that dealt with the EFU taxes, doing away with losing the deferral if the land isn't in production. That is the simplest enforcement measure we could have to make those dwellings farm dwellings. And to set up an income test and tell somebody you've got to plant it and wait 2 years, or you've got to plant the trees, doesn't help us a lot.
Excuse
to deal with those five
and seven. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. There's another thing I wanted to say to you about Yamhill County, and that is that I have been in a position of having aggregated 4 pieces of land in Yamhill County. You don't need a farm dwelling on each one of those 4 pieces of land. And they are productive filbert. They will be a productive filbert orchard. And part of what we want to do is, in fact, not right now, put a farmhouse on every one of those 4 pieces of land, but allow some time and some pressure to develop to, in fact, aggregate. Put them back together. If that's good farmland, there's no reason why you can't put a farmhouse on one of those pieces and aggregate 3 or 4 of them. So I guess I'm not willing to say, gee, I give up, let's put a farmhouse on each one, just because we can get...
I don't think I'm saying that, Senator Cohen. I would agree with you that if you could... A mechanism that can require aggregation of the small lots would be great. I don't think this accomplishes it. I don't think this helps us. The tax structure, to me, would be the ideal method by which you attack dwellings in the rural areas and require the people to utilize the land. Often, what happens in our county is someone buys a small parcel and attempts to aggregate or build up their holdings. But often they want to put that dwelling in first, and it wouldn't work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else going to talk on this?
Not unless they will have something to add to the changes. I don't want to hear we had 15 hours of hearings on this, and I don't need that reiterated, I don't think.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Day?
I'd like to try something out, if I may, if you'd permit a motion.
Yes, I would entertain a motion.
I would take the DEQ suggestions on their memorandum dated June 3rd, 1983.
LCDC?
Okay.
We got the right bill. That's the next bill.
The memorandum from LCDC, dated June 3rd, 1983, to Senator Kitzhaber from Jim Ross, subject 237. I would move the recommended changes that are made within that memorandum.
Okay. Senator Day moves the recommended changes proposed by the department, dated June 3rd, 83. Is there discussion of the motion? Is there objection?
Mr. Chairman, can I make one additional motion? One additional motion, and it's very important as far as I'm concerned. It's on page 5, line 4, and that's, I'm speaking of what I guess is our bill, the gross bill. Very basic, it's on line 4, and it says the court shall allow the prevailing party. I would like to change that to shall to may, sir. Like to ask a unanimous consent to do that.
Okay, that's on page 5.
Page 5, line 4, after the word court, the word shall be struck, and the word may shall be inserted.
Senator Day moves that on page 5 of the LC draft 237A-6, line 4, the word shall is changed to may. Is there discussion? Is there objection to that motion?
Got one other change I'd like to recommend to the committee, and that's on page 7. It's on line 2, after the word resources, I would strike the period and add, as defined in ORS 517.750.
Now, this is on page...
It's on line 2, and strike the period after resources, and we would add, as defined in ORS 517.750.
Okay, would you explain that?
Sure, I will. Sure, I will. What this really is done is this is the statute that defines the processing of aggregate and other mineral resources, and it just sustains what the current law is now. And
I don't have any problem with the language, but I would rather deal with that in Senate Bill 234, which we also have up today. We took that aggregate stuff out, and I do intend to deal with that.
All right, I just saw the processing of aggregate. I was requested by the aggregate industry if I would do it. I saw no problem with it because I must tell you that I'm concerned that we, I'm not sure I like a batch plant in the middle of the vineyard, you follow me? But I also am concerned that what we do to push these facilities too far away from where the resource is, we're really increasing our construction costs, and I think you know what we're trying to do to get enough sources for construction materials anyway and keep the cost down on our highways, and that's my concern. But I will defer to you if we can do it in another bill.
Up to date, as a matter of fact.
Do you prefer keeping it out here?
I prefer to put it in the other bill. We've got we have that debate.
That's fine. That's fine. Okay. And then there's another one that Senator Starkovich, is he here?
Yes, Senator Starkovich.
You've got your tower bill, okay? We want to get the tower taken care of.
Senator Starkovich, you want to discuss this?
At the moment, we're interested only in a conceptual amendment by the committee. We could offer specific language to the EFU section. What we'd like to do is offer a conceptual amendment that that new radio or television signal transmission towers are a conditional use in all zones, and we could propose, as I said, specific language just for EFU zones and plug it into 237, but we would rather address all zones and ask that legislative council work that in, either to this bill or 2295, whichever place it fits best, but...
Chairman?
Yes, Senator Day?
I really would support that, because I think the testimony that we heard, where you can go out and put a 900-foot tower up and the public couldn't even be heard on its construction, is just not fair. It's just not fair, and I don't care whether it's in the city or it's out in the middle of the countryside. There should have been. The biggest complaint they had was that they didn't have their day in court, not the fact that it might not have gone forth. So I would support Senator Starkovich is suggesting that we make it a condition use wherever it is, based on the definition. And we have a definition that doesn't cover all the little things. This covers your radio towers. I think it's a sound idea, because I think those people had every right to be irritated over that.
Sir, yes, sir.
I have one concern about that, and that's the I really don't want to hold up 2 through 7, because that's a bill that this is a bill that that the House Committee's waiting for, and they're going to have some extensive hearings on the marginal land question. So I am supportive of what we're trying to do, and I would support putting it into all. You know, it is on. It ought to be a conditional use in whatever zone it is.
I agree with you.
I agree with you. I don't know how.